I do think Joey Votto has the edge in the tight pants game, though. I don't know if you guys have noticed how tight Joey Votto's pants are when he plays baseball, but he wants everybody to know that he has a very impressive package.
tight pants Votto. I did not know that about Joey Votto.
I got my tight pants on. Everybody's looking at my tight pants. I got my tight pants on. I'm the only guy in town wearing tight pants. I got my tight pants on. I'm the guy wearing tight pants. I got my tight pants on.
The Dynasty Guru presents Dynasty's Child.
We're not experts, we're gurus. There's a difference.
With your host, Ian Hudson.
Because you do things that make me sigh.
Featuring Patrick Magnus.
This week for me on the internet has been fucking awful.
And Keaton DeRocher.
Cut everything after he praised me.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yeah, fine. Try that one more time.
Hello, and welcome to episode 51 of Dynasty's Child, flagship fantasy baseball podcast of the Dynasty Guru. I'm your host, Patrick Magnus, and I am a writer over at the Dynasty Guru, and I'm actually hosting the show, not just trying to host the show. I am hosting the show because Ian is not with us today. But joining me, as always, is the one and only Keaton DeRocher. How are you doing, Keaton?
I'm doing great, and I'm looking forward to seeing how your hosting works out because you've wanted it for so long, and now's your time to shine. So don't let us down.
I have, and I've realized that with great power comes great responsibility, just like all the Spider-Man movies say, and it's terrifying. I'm not going to lie. I don't know how you or Ian get to do this all the time. Anyway,
seasoned vets.
Yeah, apparently. Joining us today, filling in for Ian, is Jake. I don't know how to say your last name.
Devereaux.
So, Jake Devereaux, is that annoying enough to you that I need to do that again?
No, I don't care.
All right. Jake,
there
thanks for joining
no
us.
There is no N in the name.
Thank you for joining us. Hopefully we can get through this podcast agreeing on one or two things at least.
Don't count on it.
I won't. All right, tonight on the show, we will do our usual junk. We'll discuss news from around the major leagues, free agent signings, injuries, game reactions, and the minor league, call-ups, guys to watch. Later, we'll discuss the fantasy league, which is right now we're looking at way too early risers and fallers from our dynasty rankings, our preseason rankings, rather. And if you have questions for us, you can submit questions via the Facebook group, the Fantasy Baseball subreddit, or Twitter. You can find us at Dynasty's Child, or you can send us an email at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. That's dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. All right, guys, let's jump into the major league. Nothing transaction-wise happened. We don't have any injuries listed because, I just found out I'm hosting the show a few minutes ago. That's not Ian's fault. That's our fault. So let's jump into live action reactions. Keaton, what you got?
Yeah, I got my guy Hunter Renfroe. So he was the guy that I brought up on a previous pod. I think it was right when he came back from injury. And Adam had asked me why I was even interested in him. And the main reason at the time was because he hits a lot of homers. His peripherals weren't anything to write home about, but he was a great fourth outfield option. But now that's pretty much changed. He's a real solid, maybe even second outfielder. He is slashing 285, 305, 618 in the second half with 14 homers. He has 21 total, so he's doubled his output homer total from the first half where there was a bit of an injury. But he started the year real slow, then got hurt, went on the DL for an extended period of time, and then has really turned it around. His overall slash line now looks pretty good. He's hitting like 270 with 21 homers. But what's really great is his exit velocity is at 90 miles an hour this season, which is about 3 miles an hour faster than the previous two. And his launch angle is rather elite at a nice 18 degrees. He's got a 45% hard hit rate and a 20% fly ball rate, which has been consistent over the past few years. So this is really kind of like the hitter that he's grown into. And I wouldn't expect, wouldn't expect a major regression from this, because this kind of seems to be just how he's going to hit and how he's going to play going forward. And so he's making just awesome, awesome contact and just hitting dingers for days. So he's a guy that I am pretty excited about to see is playing really well now too, and playing even a bit better than I expected him to. So he's a guy that you should keep an eye on his whereabouts within your league, and the crazy chance that he's on the waivers, go get him.
So sure. what are you expecting from him? Are you expecting the contact, the improved average to carry over into next season?
Yeah. I don't know. 285 seems a little bit high, but I mean, his previous batting average has been about 240, 250, but I always kind of saw his skill set at like 270 to 280. And that's kind of where he's sitting now. And if he's going to hit, you know, over the course of an entire healthy season, 30 plus homers with a 270, 280 average, then that's definitely playable. His walk rate is kind of where you see power hitters walk rates, 6-7%, and his strikeout rate is low to mid 20s, which is again kind of where you see these power hitters go. So it's not like he's going to be hurting you in one of those other categories to try and reach to get the power. So he's pretty average in the other ones, but hitting a ton of home runs. He's getting a lot more hits and making just an incredible amount of contact. So he's a guy that I'm excited to see put a full healthy season together next year with this.
Yeah, I'm going to poo-poo on this. I'm going to poo-poo all over your guy. Okay. And I think that Renfro to me is power with nothing else really. I know that he's made a lot of contact here in the second half, but like, I don't know, he's just struggled with that pretty hard. You know, you mentioned his earlier batting averages of 240, and without, like, you know, he's definitely not contributing really in OBP. 300 is like passable, right? Like if he's providing elite power, you can deal with that, and it looks like he will, but I definitely don't see that average. I mean, we'll see, but he swings and misses too much to my liking, and doesn't walk enough.
I thought those were literally the two things that you love in every player.
If he walked more, I would like him more. But because he doesn't walk, I need one of the two. Like, he needs to provide elite contact, or he needs to walk. I prefer that they walk. I'm biased. Jake, what do you think?
Surprisingly enough, Patrick, I kind of agree with you more on this. I don't see the elite contact numbers. I'm looking at his contact percentage right now and his contact in the zone, and it's gone up a little from last year, but you know, it's gone up 3.3 percentage points in Z contact since last year. So I'm just not sure that this is a guy that's going to make enough consistent contact for all of this power to matter. And I definitely agree with Keaton that like his exit velocity is excellent, his launch angle is excellent, and when he hits the ball, he hits it very hard. But I'm not sure that pitch recognition is, you know, that much of a strength with him, because he still swings and misses so much. I don't know that he has much of a ceiling with this profile that he has. So I was just curious, Keaton, you said that he's made major gains in contact. Where are you seeing those?
With his hard hit rate, it's gone up about 11% over last year and about 20% on the year before. He's just hitting the ball a lot harder, but he's still his BABIP is a little bit lower at 291 right now. And even with a small correction on that, I mean, I could see that this 270 to 280 being something that he'll be able to consistently hit. And the results with how hard he's hitting it are going to be pretty good results. So he's just, I'm really interested in him, and I'm fine with you guys not being, because I think I have like four or five shares of him that I'm happy to hold and get more of.
Okay. So I'm glad you clarified, because I was just a little bit confused. I thought you were talking about like overall contact, not quality of contact. And I definitely agree with you that quality of contact with his has gotten a lot better. But, you know, without making more contact, I think his ceiling is just a little bit capped.
Yeah, he's got kind of a Teoscar or Randall Gorchek sort of thing going on, where he's got that potential, but doesn't quite have the bat speed or can't seem to make enough necessary contact. But we'll see. He's certainly done it over the second half, so we'll see if that carries over. Jake,
it is strange that you're poo-pooing his guy, though, Patrick, because you do love all of the guys you just talked about.
I do love Teoscar a lot. That's what made me think of him, just based on the fact that it seems like Keaton likes him a lot. You said you have like what, five shares of him, Keats?
Yeah, I picked him up all over the place.
Yeah, so like, you know, it's obvious that you really like him, and you know, sometimes the heart distracts you from what's really going on, and I sympathize with that sometimes. All right, you have a live action reaction there, Jake?
Yes, I do. Trevor Story. So he's a guy that I think that we as a fantasy community were really down on coming into this season, and I think for good reason, right? You looked at this guy, and while he played good shortstop and had some pop, he missed way too much. So his K rate last year was 34.4%, which is very high, and just not quite what you'd expect from a top flight shortstop. Well, this year he's dropped that all the way down to 25.8%, and as a result, he's slashing 296, 351, 559 on the season. He's already got 31 home runs. The defense has remained really good, and his contact rate within the zone has gone from 80.8% to 87.7%. So that's about as big a gain as I've ever seen for a player in a single season. And he's changed the way that he's swinging and his approach on how he's attacking the ball in the zone. And the result has been he's the number one ranked fantasy shortstop on Fantrax right now. And he doesn't really have all that many holes in his game. So I think that it's unquestionable that this guy is going to maintain his job as the shortstop, even when Brendan Rodgers comes up. Seems like Rodgers is going to be a second baseman. And he's only 25. So I think we need to start talking about Trevor Story in the same group of shortstops as we talk about guys like Francisco Lindor, Xander Bogaerts, Trey Turner, Manny Machado, Carlos Correa, Kyle Seager, and Alex Bregman. I think he's in that group, and I think he's actually a step above of the Gene Segura, Rosario, Baez, Didi Gregorius tier. I would have him somewhere within that top tier. I don't know where exactly I'd put him, but I think the gains are real, and this guy's awesome. And I just want to point out one other thing. So one of the things that we criticize with players who hit in cores is that, you know, typically they have so much more power in cores. He has hit 21 home runs at home versus 10 away. However, he still has 19 doubles away versus 20 at home. So he's not quite as big of a power hitter, but he's still, you know, a 20 home run, 20 plus doubles guy, even when he's on the road. So he's awesome. Or 40 plus doubles, I should say.
Yeah, I was just going to say that he's good. I totally agree with the gains that he's made on his approach at the plate. at least the contact, it all looks legit. I'm a bit concerned. It's so hard for me to buy in entirely because he's still striking out a lot. I think it's, was he striking out like 27% still? And he's not walking at an elite clip either. So everything is completely contact driven as far as improvements go. And that always makes me a little bit worried because, you know, the game is about like sort of countering approaches. And I'll be curious to see if the contact sticks next year. I think I'd agree with you that I'd probably have him ranked pretty highly based on the improvements I have seen. But just in the back of my mind, I'm going to be thinking about, I wish that he'd just walk more.
Story was actually a guy that I was debating on having as my live action reaction along with Hunter Renfro. And then I went with my heart with Hunter Renfro. And then I scrolled up and I saw that Jake was writing in Trevor Story. And I was like, yep, good point, good point. And particularly, you know, what you said about us kind of being down on him as a community. Patrick and I were both down on Trevor Story. I think he was our pick for a guy that was ranked too high initially in our shortstop rankings. And mainly because we expected how he played last year to carry over, where he was really more of just a three-category guy. But he straightened out a ton of that stuff. And the enormous drop in K rate is something that is pretty easily sustainable. And if he's not striking out as much, then he's making a lot more contact, hitting the ball, getting it in play. And he's consistently had BABIPs in like the 340, 350 range. And so that's already pretty darn good. And it's up about 30 points from last season. And all of that just kind of translates into he's a better player than we thought he was. And he was able to make the corrections that he needed to. And he's certainly going to be a riser within our shortstop rankings for sure. And I don't think Patrick and I will think he's ranked too high when we get to next year.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah, I did not see this kind of improvement coming from him at all. So we will see. Okay, and then one thing I wanted to touch on before we move on to my live action reaction is, what do you think this means for somebody like Garrett Hampson, who has a ton of upside, but now may not have a full-time position because, you know, assumingly, like Jake said, Rodgers is going to end up at second, Story's at shortstop, Arenado's at third for now. What do you think is going to happen?
My bold prediction is he ends up at third when Arenado leaves via free agency.
I like it. It crossed my mind.
I think he might end up as trade bait, to be honest.
I think they should trade Arenado. He's got 1 year left, and it's not like they're going to be able to re-sign him.
I think they should lock him up to a $200+ million deal. They should do everything they can to possibly re-sign this guy.
I agree.
I mean, imagine that core going forward. If you have Arenado, Story, and Brendan Rodgers, and maybe Ryan McMahon at first base, that's got to be one of the best infields in all of baseball.
I mean, they're stacked position player wise. They have a ton of depth. I think you can move Arenado on his last year of his deal and get a significant pitching piece back, which is probably what they need at this point. They have a loaded bullpen, all sorts of depth around. We'll see. I get your point. Like, I know, like, if Arenado was to stay, that would be incredible for the Rockies. And honestly, you have to expect that other MLB teams know that they can see the same splits we can, and that Arenado is not the same player on the road. So we'll see. I hope you're right. All right, moving on finally to my live action reaction. Luke Voit, 27-year-old who came quad A dude who was traded from the Cardinals over to the Yankees, has been like the best hitter for the second half. He's been amazing. Above average launch angle, exit velocity. He's never going to be a 300 hitter. That's the first thing you realize when you're looking at, you know, sort of his peripherals versus what he's actually doing. So he's hitting 300 right now, but he's K-ing 30% of the time with some crazy BABIP, and he can't hit a breaking ball for the life of him. He's got 40% whiffs on breaking balls, and he can't maintain a 300 slugging, but he has hit for power in the minor leagues. And an ISO of around 200 looks like something he could probably pull off. So, you know, you are looking at someone that walks enough, slightly above league average probably, and makes enough powerful contact at Yankee Stadium that while he's not the long-term answer, I don't think we'll be seeing Greg Bird for the rest of the season and presumably maybe next season as well. I think Voit is kind of their answer for the next year or so.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job filling the void they've had at first base all season.
You're fired. Get out.
Nailed it.
Hang up. Go away. You're done. You're done here.
Patrick, I have a baseball question for you about Luke Voit.
Yeah, what's up?
Who do you think ends up having the better career, Voit or Greg Bird?
I guess it's Greg Bird, maybe. I mean, it depends. Like, so if Greg Bird has a middling long career in the majors and Voit really only gets to put up two amazing years or three amazing years, who in your opinion has had the better career? The guy with the few amazing years or the guy that played, you know, in the majors for the longer time amount of time?
Define amazing year. Like, right. Voit's got a 366 BABIP in the second half right now, and he has 8 home runs on the season. Like, he's
8 home
he's
runs
doing
in, like,
60-something nice
plate appearances. Like, that's...
Sure. But what do we think his true talent level is here? I mean, the guy has almost no track record of success before this, and we all recognize he's playing far above his head. So, what's... I mean... Greg Bird realistically has him in every meaningful baseball skill set category, right? Or is there anything that Voit does better than Greg Bird, do you think?
I'm going to imagine
other
that he
than
probably stays healthier than him.
True. I'll give you that.
I mean, that's a big piece of it, though. Greg Bird has... I mean, I don't think anybody expects him at this point to even play maybe half a season year over year. He can't get out of his own way.
Yeah, but what he has done is pretty impressive. You know, I might be on the Greg Bird train.
What has he done?
Well, he's walked at about 10%, struck out only 25% of the time, and put up a 189 ISO while hitting, you know, 50% fly balls. I'm interested in that a lot. Very interested. That's my kind of dude right there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, in the limited time that I've seen Greg Bird when he's been healthy and good at the same time, he does things that make you kind of look at him and say, oh, this is a good baseball player here. This is a guy that can play first in the AL East for the Yankees and not look out of place. But he is so frequently hurt, and I think he's so frequently sort of coming back and trying to find his timing and things like that, that he's almost never optimal Greg Bird. But when you do catch those glimpses, like, you see a guy who could be an all-star.
Yeah, you know, he has only managed to put up, I think, over 500 plate appearances once since he's been with the Yankees. So that's not great.
He hasn't.
He has one time. One time in 2013 in the minors, he had 573 plate appearances. So, yeah, he has never, other than that, throughout the whole minor leagues, he has not put up over 500 plate appearances, which is mega concerning. But, yeah, you're right.
So if you look at the last two seasons for him, which was 48 games and then 76 games this season, it's about 135 games, so that's pretty close to the equivalent of a full season with some days off. He's got 20 homers and 63 RBIs and a batting average of 195.
190 what?
195.
Oof. Yeah, anything sub-Mendoza is kind of ugly.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I mean, I know that's it's across two different seasons where there were injuries, but I'm getting concerned now that we're seeing this more and more. Hit 190 in the 48 games he played last year. He's hitting 197 in the 76 games he's played this season. We need to see some significant improvements from him before we can... I mean, you're right. He's shown flashes of a potential all-star first baseman, but his actual numbers that he's putting up are so far the opposite direction on a more consistent basis that we need to see some major significant changes from Bird.
Yeah, in many ways, these two are opposites, I think, because when I watch Bird, I think, like, hey, this guy passes the eye test. He looks like that type of guy. And when I watch Voit, I see a guy who reminds me of late-year Billy Butler, like DH style play. I mean, I think Voit does some things well, and one of the things I really like is the 42.6% hard contact rate that he's had this season. That's really impressive. He almost makes no soft contact, but I'm just not sure, like, if this is the type of guy who they're going to trust to play any sort of a full season, or if any team is going to trust him to play a full season at first base. So I don't know how much we can expect to kind of get from him, because his counting stats are going to be limited by playing time.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens here, because I definitely think I've pretty much gone full circle here. I got to think I agree with you, Jake, in the sense that I think that Bird is ultimately their answer still, based on what I've seen. And I think he's a great buy low. If anything, that's what Luke Voit is. He is a reason or an excuse to buy low on Greg Bird's potential. I do like how hard Voit hits the ball. Like I said, I don't hit the 300 ISO he's putting up right now is not sustainable, but I do think that 200 is, you know. Breaking balls are an issue for him. I wonder if that will be exploited more as he gains more plate appearances. I think I'd rather own Greg Bird, and I think that he'll have the better career. So congratulations, you won our first debate of this podcast. There's no award.
Yay. Oh, well. I'll take it anyway.
All right. That's quite the live-action reaction we just had. So why don't we jump right into the minor leagues? So call-ups, demotions. We have got Rowdy Tellez making his appearance now for the Blue Jays at first base, and Victor Robles out in the outfield for the Nationals. You guys happen to be interested in either one of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still very interested in Robles, and I, for the love of all that is holy, really want Harper to stay in Washington so we can see a Soto, Robles, Harper outfield for the next however many years. That's my baseball wish that I'm setting off to the baseball gods, and I hope that obviously the biggest factor there is that Harper stays. So let's hope that that happens. But I love that outfield for the short amount of time that we're going to get to see it, at least this year. And that's Washington, for the lack of success that they've had, they've been a very fun team to watch. And with Soto and Robles, like, I feel like a lot of people forgot that they still had Victor Robles in their system, who's 21 and still really good at baseball. So
he was injured for a large portion of the season, wasn't he?
Yes. He got hurt, so and that's what led to Soto being called up when Adam Eaton went down instead of Robles. And obviously, that was probably the right call.
It's a wrist injury?
Actually, you know what? I don't remember what it was.
It was something that affected his swing, I'm pretty sure. But Patrick, to answer your question, I am very interested in both of these guys. I think Robles is going to be a major leaguer who hits for a lot of contact, has middling power, plays elite defense, and steals a lot of bases. So that's a very, very useful fantasy player, sort of. I don't know if I just heard Keaton make this comparison to Adam Eaton, but I think, like, the Adam Eaton skill set is in there, hopefully with about 30 times the durability of Adam Eaton. That'd be really nice. But Tellez, I think, is the really interesting guy because he is beefy boy, who you like. And I was looking at his picture on MILB.com, and he's listed at 6'4", 220. This guy is easily 6'4", 280. There is no no possible way he is 220. He's interesting because in 2016, he had just an incredible batting line at AA. And when he had that year, he was just 21. He had a 917 OPS, and then he struggled mightily in 2017 with AAA. He kind of righted the ship this year a little bit, got it up to 765. Not crazy impressive there, but the power is still there. And then in a short stint in the MLB, he's looked really good. I kind of feel like this guy is one or two adjustments away from being a guy who could play first base DH in the major leagues. I think he has good enough pitch recognition, good enough power. He's a guy I would continue to monitor. I just feel like there's something worth looking at there. And he's also a lefty, which I think is pretty good. Lefty power is always interesting to find if you can in fantasy. So I like both these guys a lot.
Yeah, he is interesting. I wish that he had hit for a bit more power in AAA this year. The plate skills look great. But he's not necessarily driving the ball the way that you'd hope a big beefy boy like him would. Now, that being said, Rogers Center is a great place to hit. And also, the Blue Jays have done a fantastic job with getting power out of hitters. So I'll be curious to see how he develops. I agree with you. He's worth monitoring for sure. And just to clarify, the injury for Robles was an elbow injury. Looks like he hyperextended it pretty bad on a dive. So. All right. Shall we move into the top pod spec segment of this podcast, or do either of you gentlemen have anything else to say?
I'm ready to keep Jake's losing streak alive.
I'm ready to win.
I can't wait for you to lose. all right. I'm going to jump in here and go first, just because I'm really excited about my dude. So forgive me when I butcher the pronunciation here, but Alejandro Kirk, Toronto catcher, who's 19 years old in rookie ball. This guy is so incredible. He's 5'9 and 220 pounds. I gotta say, he looks bigger than 220 pounds. If you guys haven't seen this home run video, please click on it right now and watch it, because it's absolutely worth it. It's why I fell in love with this guy. It was a fantastic tweet. I'll have our account, Dynasty's Child, retweet it of this home run, and it's just Zeus-like. This tiny round man just bashing a baseball. What's even better than that is that he's got ratios to back it up so far. Now, obviously, down in rookie ball, we can't take things too seriously, but he's walking more than he's K-ing. He's got a 13.5% walk rate and only a 8.6 K rate. Already hit two homers, got a plus 200 ISO, and even two stolen bases. I imagine he just like rolled up like Sonic the Hedgehog and just spun off towards the bases because he's very round. He's got a lot of ground balls and a low fly ball percentage, but an elite line drive, so I'm still hopeful. And he's pulling most of those home runs, which I've talked about before, I'm not really concerned with. So yeah, Alejandro Kirk is my dude. He looks to be something fun. I'll be monitoring him everywhere and getting him wherever I can.
He looks like a bowling ball. Legitimately looks like a bowling ball.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? Does.
Yeah. No, he actually does.
Yeah, he's going to be a blast. I really am looking forward to following him.
There's no way he stays as a catcher.
No. No, no way. There's no way his legs will be able to support that crouching position for that long.
Yeah.
Like, what are his pop times? Like 10?
As a bowling ball, he just kind of like is there behind the plate. He actually just sits down. And then he's winded when he tries to get up.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good at blocking those pitches in the dirt, cuz he doesn't have to move. They just hit him.
Nothing getting by him.
No.
But when something all does right, get by him, everyone clears the bases.
But they can't touch home plate because he's on top. Jake, you have a prospect?
Oh, do I have a prospect? Yes, I really do. This time I brought the goods because I realized I needed to end my losing streak. So,
what loser did you bring to us this week?
This is not a loser, Patrick. This is Jose Pujols, of the great name Pujols. He's a right fielder for the Phillies. He's only 22 years old, and he played the end of this season in Double A, and he spent the majority of this season in High A, the Florida State League, which is a notoriously difficult league to hit in. Very big parks, and it's just if you can hit in the Florida State League, you can pretty much hit anywhere. He had 22 home runs this year, including 18 of those in the Florida State League. He batted .295, .365, .503 across those two levels. And this is a guy who on MLB.com, the prospect pipeline, is rated outside of the Phillies' top 30 prospects. And one of our former guys here on the Dynasty Guru, Matt Winkleman, runs a site called Phillies Minor Thoughts, and he wrote about him in August of this year, and basically said that there's, you know, major potential here for this guy, because he's got plus bat speed, plus plus raw power, plus plus arm, all those things that are plus. He still needs to work on recognition with off speed pitches, but clearly he's making that work at High A and at the Double A level. And Double A is typically when you start seeing a lot more breaking balls. So I think next year is going to be really telling with him. But for guys that are this far down and this far off of mainstream lists, I mean, this guy's probably available in almost every league that you play in, regardless of depth. He's someone who could come up and actually be an impact major leaguer with the skill set that he has. And the only thing that really needs to improve is just breaking ball recognition, and he's already made huge strides in that over the last few years. He's already the right field profile that you'd think of. He already has the power, lots of different things in his favor. So I think this is the exact type of guy you take a lottery ticket on, a guy that is really just missing one thing, because if it all clicks, and the trajectory certainly looks that way, you could have a major league starter on your hands. So I love Jose Pujols.
You know who
his strikeout?
He reminds me of Dylan Cousins. That's what I was going to say, Keaton, because of the strikeouts.
Yeah, his strikeout rate is wild.
Yeah, but the power is real.
But everything else actually looks pretty good.
That's pretty, like, the 18 homers in Florida State is really impressive. I'm totally with you on that. I'm actually working on a tool right now for Park Factors, and it's like ranked 11th across the board as far as like minor league parks are concerned for power.
It's routine for guys who have plus power not to hit over 10 home runs in the Florida State League.
All right, we'll see if this loser makes the cut here.
Keith, I will say, though, it's not an enormous sample size, but 26 games, 104 plate appearances, and his walk rate is 13.5% at AA. That, to me, tells me that he is getting a lot better with his pitch recognition, and that's something that he's putting in effort to get better at. So that's a pretty positive sign.
Yeah, and the other thing, Keaton, to go along with that is the walk rate has also been up as well. So
yeah,
it's all trending in the right direction. But I totally agree with you that if you're putting up, you know, low 30s percentage K rates at these levels, it's troubling to some extent. But you know, it for an outside of the top 30 guy, this is a hell of a lottery ticket.
Yeah, I mean, it's 10% better this year than it was last year. So that's already major steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you like to see a player make adjustments, particularly going, like, it's not a surprise that he's struggling at Double A. It's much more advanced pitching, but he hasn't lost a ton in the transition. He's gained in that walk rate and sustained the strikeout rate. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, Keaton, what do you got?
All right, my guy is a guy that we have, or at least I have, talked about a couple times on the pod, and I was actually kind of surprised I hadn't picked this guy yet, but Edwin Rios is my dude who I said in the beginning, I think it was the first base pod, because he was my guy that I said was too low. He's ready for the major leagues. He was ready probably before the season, and nothing has changed. He's still ready. But he's blocked pretty much everywhere, so that's kind of a bummer. I was surprised he wasn't one of the guys that got traded in the flurry of moves that the Dodgers made, but here we are. So he has a decent enough walk rate, which is, when I flip back over here to my tabs, it was 9.5% last year, 6.7% this year. It's been consistently between 6 and 7%, but I don't think it's much of a stretch for him to get to that, you know, just shy of 10%. His strikeout rates have been low 20s. It was a little bit up this year, 32.3%. But that really is a major outlier from his previous seasons, where it's been 18 to 22%. So again, I don't think that's anything that can't be corrected on his end. And he also has amazing power. He easily has the potential for 30 home runs at the major league level, and he's consistently batted above 300 for the past about 3-4 years now. So he's a guy that he makes some good contact. He walks enough. Strikeouts are kind of always there for these types of guys, but there's nothing outrageous on his end. And he's a guy that has a ton of power. And I'm still waiting to see him at the major league level, and I will be excited when he gets there. But he just doesn't have a path to playing time right now, which is probably why he spent the whole year again at AAA, because there wasn't really anything in his numbers that suggested he needed to repeat it. But they had him repeat it anyway. So, Edwin Rios is my guy, and I'm looking forward to when he eventually gets a chance to play in the majors and get some at-bats there.
I like a ton of things about this guy. I just wanted to point out something really funny, though, about his profile. Did you see his scouting report has a 20 out of 20 for speed?
I did not see that.
that's my kind, like, of player right there.
That's like right now Albert Pujols level speed.
Yeah, he does have 4 total steals in the minors, and his last steal was in 2017.
My goodness.
I want to see your pod spec and my pod spec in a race.
I got to say, I think the bowling ball has him.
Yeah, well, I mean, he has the added advantage that if the field is on a slight downward slant, then he doesn't really need to run, and he can just tumble.
Yeah, he tumbles, and momentum builds. He just keeps going faster and faster. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. As he collects more rings, he gets to go faster and faster and faster.
Collects more rings. All right, let's get this out of the way. It's time to vote, and I will vote for Jose Pujols. Rios, I've seen. I know this flavor of ice cream. I'm over it. Bring on that sexy Jose Pujols. I'm in.
Wow. And I got voted for by Patrick.
I don't know what's going on. This pod is upside down. Jake, you got to go next. You got to keep the suspense going.
Okay. As much as I find the bowling ball comical, I do think that Edwin Rios has a major league skill set. I'm just not sure. I'm sorry. I gotta do this, you know, the way that I'd want our listeners to actually go. I just think Edwin Rios is good enough that he's going to eventually find a spot, even if that's not on the Dodgers. I'm not sure if he ends up being an impact guy, but I'm certain that he ends up being a guy that plays in the major leagues. And I think that that's useful in its own right.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I do find the bowling ball comical, and he's a guy that I'll keep an eye on. But my vote goes to Jose Pujols because of you know, what we just talked about at the end with the strides that he's making and how well he's kind of been performing pretty under the radar. So that's the guy that I would go with.
What's that? Did I just win my first top pod spec?
You did. Oh, you did awful. Win it.
Woo! Well, this is great.
Congratulations. You are, what, 1 in 1,000,000 now?
One in two.
One in two.
I was 0 for 2. Yep. I'm like the Royals with my record right now, my winning percentage. So.
You were I guess Meg didn't win hers either. I was going to say, you were the only guest on the pod that hadn't won. But it was you and Meg.
Oh, well.
That's good company. Good company,
at least.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so Jose Pujols, top pod spect of episode 51. All right, moving on now to the Fantasy League. We're going to take a look at all too early risers and fallers for next year's rankings. This pod, we're going to take a look at first base. And I did the write-ups for first base. So, Keaton, I don't know how to play this game, I just realized.
You just pull up the rankings, like, and then you read the write-up, and we try and guess who it is.
All right, I can do that. Okay.
So there's a link to 1 through 20.
I got it pulled up already, guy.
All right. Are we gonna do the game before we do our risers and fallers?
No, let's just get right into the risers and fallers. My bad. So, Keaton, I noticed that you took both my riser and faller.
Oh, we had the exact same people?
Well, I had Jesus Aguilar as my riser. But
me too.
The faller, and my faller was Eric Hosmer. So, yes, we had the two exact same guys.
Oh, cool.
Great.
So there's just consensus.
Yeah, we have consensus. Why don't you go ahead and talk about what you like about those guys, and I'll chime in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jesus Aguilar has done enough to suggest that he is a rather good baseball player, and I don't even think we may have had him in the top 20 last year, which is kind of a shame. Although,
he was ranked, I think, 49th.
Whoa.
Or 45th. Okay. He's way down there.
Yeah, okay. Well, he shouldn't be there anymore because he has done quite enough. I mean, obviously, he was an all-star this year. He just makes a whole bunch of contact, and it's loud, and it goes rather far when he does make the contact. He's just completely turned around his entire profile, and it doesn't seem like it's anything that isn't sustainable. So I just, I was scrolling through the top 20, didn't see him, assumed we probably had him at like 25, and was like, yeah, he's going to be way higher than that. But he is going to be way higher than mid 40s for sure. That was a huge miss on our part. And then for the faller, or do you have anything else that you wanted to add?
I think the biggest piece with him in particular, anyone that listens to the pod knows that we're huge fans of him at this point. I think that the biggest thing is that we think it's sustainable, right? This approach and what he's doing is going to carry over into the next few years. And he's a bit older of a player. He's 28 years old, but, you know, still, he's going to rise. He'll be in the 20s next year for sure, at least, if not higher than that.
I would think higher than that for sure. I think he might be borderline top 10 for me.
Yeah, maybe three to 5 years. You're right. Jake, you have thoughts on
Jesus? I think I would have Aguilar top. Yeah, I would have him top 10. I think I traded for him this year in a league that I play in. I really like him, and I think I would echo most of the things that you guys said. So I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I am very much in agreement that he is a riser and someone that you should buy confidently if you're looking to solve a long-term issue at first base for your team. And the sneaky secret about first base right now is that there aren't all that many guys that are that great at the position. It's thin. So
it's really
awful.
Don't
have a top. Yeah, if you don't have a top like 10-15 guy, you're hurting. So yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and then so on to my faller, which is Eric Hosmer. I'm gonna take a little victory lap on this one with you, Patrick, because back in the off-season pods when he signed, you were ecstatic and thrilled that he was in San Diego. You thought that was a great fit. And I said, I don't think that's a great fit. He's not even going to come close to 20 home runs this season. And you were like, he'll easily pass it. We should have made a bet, but we didn't. And
I'm really sad that we didn't make a bet about it.
Yeah. This season just kind of proved that point that San Diego was not a great fit for him. Obviously, it was a ton of money, and he was going to take it. But I was not excited about that destination for him and fantasy-wise, and it has not been a good season. And there's many more for Hosmer to go in San Diego. So he's not going to be as high as we had him, which now I don't have the rankings open because I didn't want to see the blurbs, but I believe he was in the top 10.
Yeah, whatever he was too high. I do believe he's in the top 10, and I was wrong. I'll admit it. I really didn't think that the park was going to have as much of an impact, but it seems to be a decline in skills combined with the park, and yeah, you were right. He is he looks to be not so good, and it definitely didn't come close to that 20.
No.
You guys had him in the top 7. Well, I guess we, because I did these rankings as well.
You're part of this group too, man.
You are a part of the website.
You're right. We had him 7. Wasn't great. Bad choice.
Jake, who are your risers and fallers? Way too early risers and fallers.
So my riser is Tyler White, who has been filling in at first base and DH for the Houston Astros. I got a chance to actually go to the Red Sox-Astros game yesterday and watched Tyler White perform against a pretty good pitcher in Eddie Rodriguez, who's got some pretty tough stuff from the left side and was pumping 95 yesterday. So not an easy player to hit against. And Tyler White hit a triple off of him and looks just so good at the plate. And when you dig into his numbers a little bit, it's a really pretty impressive offensive profile here. In 70 games at AAA this year, he had 14 home runs with a 14.7% walk rate, and he struck out just 12.5% of the time while batting .333. He came up to the major leagues, and in 48 games there, he has 11 home runs. He's walking 11.6% of the time, striking out 20.3% of the time, and he has a .303 ISO. His BABIP is not out of control whatsoever. It's .321 for a guy who hits the ball as hard as him. That's pretty typical. And he's got a .599 slugging percentage and a .168 weighted runs created plus. This dude mashes. He's really good, and his bat is going to need to find a way into the lineup, I think, more and more. I mean, they're playing him often now because they recognize how good this bat is, and I think it could be a game-changing bat for the playoffs, but more importantly for your fantasy team. He's already qualified for first base for next year, so he will be in those rankings, and I think that I would be very aggressive with him for next year. I'm looking at my rankings from last year right now, and I think I would have him in the top 10, Tyler White, as a first base option right now. It'd be the back end of the top 10, but he's got potential to be a top 5 guy for me at first base next year. And then I don't know if you guys want to comment on that now, or do you want me to do my faller first?
Well, I definitely want to comment on it because I love Tyler White. I talked about him, and I've expected that his performance would regress. And it hasn't. He's still been awesome. And there's definitely enough there where I'm buying everywhere I can. He does seem to only hit home runs to the pull side. He seems to lack power going the other way. But I don't care. He's so magical. His plate approach is so awesome. Yeah, I like him a lot too. Good call.
I echo everything that both of you guys said.
Well, we're just all agreeing a little bit.
Kumbaya today.
Yeah, I don't like it.
This faller that I had pains me, and I'm not even sure I believe it myself, because this player is probably one of my favorite players in baseball history, but it's Joey Votto. I think we have to talk about what Votto didn't do this year. Votto played in 162 games last year and had an amazing season, one of the best of his career, probably could have won the MVP. But this year, Votto has played in 128 games, only has 10 home runs. He's striking out more than he has in 3 years. The average is lower than it's been in basically forever. He's not slugging almost at all. He slugged 416 this year. He's got a 131 weighted runs created plus, which is still 31% better than the major league average, but it's Joey Votto we're talking about here, so that is not good. Everything in here just looks bad. And one of the things that really stood out to me is that Joey Votto was so much more passive this year when he was at the plate. His swing rate in the zone, so pitches in the zone, went from 66.6% to 62.1% in a year. That's a lot of percentage points to drop for attacking pitches. And especially we've seen him have better seasons when he's attacked more pitches in the zone. And he was just passive most of the season. So passive with no power, more strikeouts. This was bad. And if anyone can reverse it, it is Joey Votto. And next year he'll probably come out and be a monster. But I think that you have to pay attention to the fact that he is about to turn 35. So next year will be his age 35 season. And most of the time, guys don't get better.
It's really sad. But, you know, inevitable. Like, he can't be a Hall of Fame player forever. The wheel's got to come off at some point.
But can he not? Like, how much would it surprise you if next year he came back and was the best player in baseball at first base?
No, that really wouldn't surprise me at all.
I don't know if it would shock
you. No, it would not. He's amazing. He's incredible. He's a fantastic player, and nothing would surprise me. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if next year he came and was flat out awful. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he was the best player at first base. Like, he's that dynamic, I guess, at this point in his career, just with age versus the sheer amount of talents he's got. So
then, looking ahead, I had Votto number 4 overall. Jake, you had him also 4 overall.
Look at us, Keaton. Yeah. Lockstep.
A lot of people had him 3rd, too. I don't remember. I don't have the overall consensus ones open to see where he actually fell. But so do we feel that he has regressed enough to be outside of the top 10? Or I feel pretty comfortable with outside the top 5, but is he going to fall that far within the first base rankings to be outside the top 10?
I would hope not. I don't think I'll have him outside of the
top 10. I won't be able to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Keaton?
I don't know, to be honest with you. he might be borderline for me. The biggest piece with his age, and I mean, I know he has the ability to bounce back, but it hasn't been a great season on several fronts, as Jake pointed out, and he'll be 35. He might be borderline top 10 for me.
So Jake, this might be a silly question, but Tyler White or Joey Votto for dynasty owners?
Oh man, I'm still gonna go Votto just because he's Joey Votto. I always bet on, like, generational skill set, even when people get old. But I love Tyler White. I do think Joey Votto has the edge in the tight pants game, though. I don't know if you guys have noticed how tight Joey Votto's pants are when he plays baseball, but he wants everybody to know that he has a very impressive package.
tight pants Votto. I did not know that about Joey Votto.
Yeah, it's probably his cup, but, you know.
Well, the more you know about Joey Votto's pants.
I'll try and send a picture when I can.
Oh, thank you. Good. I think that we... So, we're going to play this game. What do we call this game, Keaton?
I don't know. The write-up game?
All right, we're going to play the write-up game, where I will read several of the things that I wrote in the preseason about first baseman, and you two will try to guess what player I was talking about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yes, I just posted a picture of Joey Votto's tight pants on our
pre-pro saw that
page. So
great,
you all
can't
get
wait
a chance to look at that.
Can't wait to go look at that in a bit. Okay, so I'll start with this one. Down here at the bottom of our top 10 list is one of the best hitters of our generation. Blank has been a stalwart at first base for a long time. Entrenched in dynasty lineups, he would have cost a fortune to obtain in leagues years ago. Injuries concerns over his body type have led to Miggy... Oh, Keaton.
Is it Miguel Cabrera?
Yeah, it is. I do think he would have gotten it away
when he said Miguel.
Actually, I didn't even hear him say that. It was the best hitter in our generation, but now he sucks. Peace. I was like, oh, must be Miguel Cabrera.
Yes, it was. All right. All right, here's another one.
You're bad at this game.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to play. All right, here we go. The oldest, most dynasty dead man on this list, blank. In his old age, he's taken on a strong affection for parrots, pretending to carry one on his arm as he rounds the bases after a massive home run. Keaton.
Edwin Encarnacion.
Yes, that is correct.
Boom.
I'll finish reading this write-up because it's funny. This may seem like a fairly odd behavior, but we just shake it off and grin. Old people get away with odd behavior all the time. It's just what happens. You get old, and suddenly a large chunk of social norms no longer apply to you. I thought that was pretty good. Just give myself
that was a pretty good one.
I really love Edwin, by the way. Everything about that write-up is great.
Well, let's do one more.
Nobody likes plain oatmeal. I'm talking straight-up plain oatmeal. No syrup, no brown sugar, nothing. I don't know anyone that really likes plain oatmeal, but one might eat it for
Patrick.
Health. It's Jake.
This has got to be Brandon Belt.
No, it's not, but good guess. I like Brandon Belt more than that.
Okay.
There's not a lot of flash or, frankly, personality. However, he's good for the health of your fantasy baseball team. Annually, he puts up great ratios with an average that will hover between 280 and 300, 20 to 25 home runs, and low to mid 90 RBI and runs. He hasn't ever scored 100 runs or 100 RBIs in his career, but depending on his landing spot this offseason, that could certainly change. Unless there's a change to his swing, he's unlikely to ever hit 30 or more.
Patrick.
Keaton.
Sorry.
Is it Hosmer?
It is. Congratulations. Yeah. I think you got everyone, right?
I was
going
to say that, too. Yeah. That was really good.
I remembered you being so excited about that write-up that you... I think you sent me your write-up list before it was published, and you were like, you need to read this one, because this plain oatmeal analogy is so good. I was trying to remember who it was.
It was really Hosmer on the nose until this year, when he has become cold oatmeal. Cold plain oatmeal instead of his regular hot oatmeal, which I do like regular oatmeal, by the way. I do like plain oatmeal. I don't know why I wrote that I didn't. That is going to do it for today because my brain is mush, and I'm seeing a picture of Joey Votto in very tight pants. So,
do you like it?
I do. I do like it because I love Joey Votto. He can do no wrong. Paint your pants on, dude. I don't care. This has been Dynasty's Child. I've been your host, Patrick Magnus, and I'm always your host. Don't forget that. You can find us at the Dynasty Guru website, where I'll be writing some words about AFL deep Dynasty prospects within the next 2 weeks. I'll be releasing two parts that'll analyze about 24 players that are under the radar from the AFL. Keaton DeRocher, where can we find you? We can find you on Twitter at KeatonTDG. And are you writing any words these days or what? I told you to write a Matt Chapman article last week. What happened?
It's in process, actually. It's
okay,
halfway done. I needed to take a break after the triple plays and just kind of breathe for a second. So I've been off the past couple weeks. But I have that Chapman piece in the chamber, which might come out this week. And then you and I, Patrick, are going to collaborate on a top 50 draft prospects for this upcoming season. So all the players that are, off-season minor league draft eligible, we're going to do a top 50.
That'll be fun.
I'm actually really looking forward to that because I know that we have some similarities in our rankings and some vast differences. That'll be fun to hash out.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be great. We'll probably need to have a mediator at some point. Maybe Jake can help us out there. And Jake Devenroe, right? Did I get your last name right that time?
I couldn't hear it. You, like, faded out there.
Yeah, you got out. So we'll say no, you got it wrong.
Okay, Jake Devenroe. Yeah?
Devereaux.
There's
no N.
Damn it.
There's still no N in my name.
Devereaux. All right. Anyways, Jake Devereaux, thank you so much for joining us again. We made it through the podcast without any extreme debates, which is surprising. And in fact, we had a lot of agreement. Where can we find you on the social media, and what are you working on?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at @DevJake, and you can find my Red Sox podcast on the site Over the Monster. The podcast is called The Red Seat. Go ahead and listen to that and subscribe if you like the Red Sox. And I write there as well, so you can find that. And I think I'm going to be on this show a little bit more regularly as well, so you can find me podcasting here. I don't know. I might pop up in some other places, but that's all I've got for right now.
All right. Nice. So that's Jake popping up everywhere. you can find me at the Green Magnus on Twitter if you'd like the Green Monster, but it's Magnus. I know, very clever. And you can follow Adam Lawler, who produces this podcast, at the StatCast Era. So thank you, as always, Adam. Thanks to Caraway, that's CARRAWAY, for letting us use our theme song, Raising the Dead, and our outro, The Last Song, off their self-titled EP. Go check them out. WeAreCaraway.bandcamp.com. All right, that's going to do it. Have a great day, and as always, be the best bird dog that you can be.
Straight lace center and all that I got. Kissing me out in the parking lot. Poisonous venom biting down on my lip. You turn and walk away with a sway of your hip. I'm so close to getting what I need, but you're so intent on making my heart bleed. So put some more Vaseline right onto your teeth. You don't want that smile sticking when you're lying to me.